Hi,
Robert. Welcome to this week's exciting edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
I'm Judy Nathans.
And let's see, so I'm sweating here. This is a...
I see, you know what? You don't have air conditioning. What can I say?
I don't have air conditioning. And the thing is that if I don't close the windows around here, at least somewhat close the windows, you hear all the trucks coming by here.
Don't you have a fan?
Actually, come to think of it, I have a window wide open. So if you do hear some loud trucks.
No, you've got your earphones on. It's only coming through your.
Okay. All right. That's cool.
What about a fan? You don't have a fan?
It's my students would complain when I have a fan running because they would hear the sort of humming sound, whatever.
Oh,
so I'm sort of acclimated.
You are so old school. Really?
It's true. It's definitely true.
All right. If you start getting really red, I'm going to call.
That's right. Call 911. There we go.
I'm not going to do that.
All right. So anyway, so today's August 4th, 2020.
I know.
We are somehow managing to get through. Yeah, I think we all sort of went underground into quarantine. For some of us, it began approximately April 1st, maybe a little
March
earlier than that.
March 16th is when everything kind of officially closed. And then when they said no March Madness, I knew it was bad.
Yeah, really. But at least I can watch some baseball games now, at least for the time being.
Well, what do you think of that, though, that experience?
You know, it's a little nonsensical to see cardboard fans, but you know, I'm kind of perfectly happy with mythology right now.
Yeah. And they pipe in the crowd.
Yeah.
As I think I told you, maybe I didn't send that email. You know, when you listen to it on the radio, it's almost like it's not no difference because they still have a little bit of a crowd, but it's like you're listening to on the radio. You don't see it.
To me, it's sort of part of summer and, you know, a summer without any baseball at all is still sort of not the greatest. So
you watching basketball?
Not yet. I mean, I'll probably pick up some games. I'm more of a baseball person, quite honestly.
That's just
the way it is. Okay. So one of the things that I think maybe we should emphasize and maybe we should continue to emphasize in future dates is something, I mean, I've actually spoken to people from the Cambridge Election Commission.
Oh, right.
And just in case anybody has any doubts, the thing is, so the state legislature made it so that people can now do vote by mail.
Yep.
Right. So there's, you know, there's absentee ballot. There's different kind of categories. But for most of us, the vote by mail option just means you mail in the card, you'll get a ballot back. You can either mail it back or the city will set up there. I think the state even provided for a drop box at the local election commission. Okay. There may be others, but it's not been approved yet. So, but the thing is the message I think that needs to go out far and wide and clear. Mm-hmm. Is that the election commission, the election staff, really do want people to vote by mail. Just in terms of the safety of poll workers and just general efficiency of this, they've had to move 14 polling locations.
Right. I know, I listened to most of that yesterday. There was a special meeting on that.
Yeah.
And so, can I ask you something about that?
Because sure.
I looked at, because my new voting location is the LBJ Apartments, which is, you know, but that's not included. They're still going to vote there because it's not on the list.
It's not a long-term care facility. It's an elderly house.
It's elderly, but maybe because of how it's spaced out, it's in the common room.
Right, exactly.
It's a separate entrance. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but you know, there were places like Cadbury Common where there were
that's closed.
COVID-19 deaths.
Well, but Mount Auburn also is just a senior living. It's not a nursing home, but that's
right. Exactly.
I don't know why that one was closed.
Some of the times it's because of there's just not adequate space in some polling locations for social distancing for the staff and the voters, et cetera.
Even
to be able to process a line of voters. But the message really needs to be clear because people like me who are habitual voters, by the way, we are now down to 106 people who haven't missed a single Cambridge election since 1997.
That's including primary.
Exactly. So I'm one of the the hallowed 106 here, right? So, but the thing is, so I was a person who normally I instinct say go vote, go to the polls, go to the, you know, you're driven to want to do that. It didn't take much from two election commissioners to convince me that it's in everybody's best interest to go by the vote by mail procedure if at all possible. And if something goes wrong, well, okay, you can still vote on election day, right? But, you know, it's really, I think it's so strongly recommended.
Right. You know what I just saw on, I think the Porter Square listserv, that you can track your ballot on the Secretary of State's websites. In other words, track where you're in the process.
Right. So just to be, if you need the reassurance, and I think many of us would like that reassurance actually to know.
My only concern is that we're doing it all right here in this state, and it almost, we're probably all going to, you know, but it's other states that I worry about. Really worry about.
There's going to be improprieties, I think, in some of the states. And I'm not speaking as sort of a never Trump paranoia.
No, just point.
I just think it's new for a lot of people.
Right.
The state of Oregon has been doing this for years. They have it down
and Washington too.
Machine.
Think, right?
So the thing is, some places this is nothing to them. But the thing is, you know, for a lot of jurisdictions, it's something pretty new. And another thing too, people need to understand is that because of that, the likelihood that all the states will have election results on election night all clear is is improbable. In my view, unless they just become magicians between now and November.
Right. Well, unless it's so obvious. But still, I think they'll be very careful not to do that because.
But so that's something that I just think everybody needs to. So anybody who's watching is just definitely talk it up. Convince your neighbors that this is really what the elections officials really would prefer. So I think it's easier for people, but it's also easier on the poll workers. I think they will have enough poll workers, so we're here, but still.
At those locations, right. All right, this is a question I have. Maybe, I don't know if you can answer it. Say you requested a mail-in ballot, okay? But then you decide, well, I'm not gonna mail it in, I'm gonna go to the polls. There's a lag time. Say you mailed it in and then you go to the polls. I mean, these are, you know, what happens then? Are they going to know if you voted twice? Or
they should. I think part of the reason why they wanted these so-called poll pads is that, once your ballot, they do the check-in, check-out at the polling locations. So now there'll be, I believe, now I'm not speaking definitively here, but I believe they have the way of basically the sort of, once you're checked off on that, you'll sort of go right into the system so that if an absentee ballot were to come, they say, sorry, you've already voted.
Or if the ballot shows up later. Or
if they've already checked
in. More likely it would show up later rather than, or if it showed up before and got counted, then it'll know, oh, wait, you voted already.
It should work that way. Is everything going to run? Will everything work perfectly? I can't guarantee that. But
The whole other issue is the post office.
Yes, right.
Because, you're saying there's going to be a drop-off, which is at the election commission, but then you can mail it in.
Exactly. And I think that's probably secure enough, because the thing is, it's just a local mailing. I think it has a distinctive color. Postal workers will be trained to grab those first and process them quick.
But then they're having so many problems, and Trump's creating more. And he, the head of this new postal thing is totally doesn't know anything about postal.
But if you're just talking about within Cambridge,
right,
you drop it in a Cambridge box, it goes to processing, they can immediately separate those out, get them through. Those ought to go fast. So I don't think there's any rational reason for people to be concerned about local mailings for balloting, right? But on the other hand, if you're absentee but you're in another state or something, maybe you should worry a little bit.
Well, I would hope they would extend maybe the deadline, because just in case there are problems with the postal service being able to make a delivery to whatever. I just think that's got to be, I don't know if that's something that has to be done by policy or if it's up to each jurisdiction.
It just has to be in sync with what the state legislature permitted and what the Secretary of State has flexibility to regulate, you know.
I hope so.
So anyway, so that's just something that's coming up, and it's big, and
that's,
it's
like
real.
It's September 1st is the primary.
Right. So the thing is, so that'll come up soon. I don't know. I mean, for many of us, there's nothing particularly controversial about the primary, but we always
vote. How can you say that?
Well, is Markey versus Kennedy? That's the only thing.
Well, that's a big deal for a lot of people.
I know. But, you know, but it's not, the presidential one is going to be the one that everybody cares most about, but not that the outcome is particularly in doubt for Massachusetts, but still, it's an important statement to me, I think. So now there are other things that are very interesting that are going on around town. I thought it would be kind of worth mentioning some of these things right away. And in fact, actually in that spirit, I think what I would like to do is actually, let me cue it up here a little bit here. is to say that they're the good folks around Central Square have been really yeah. on their game,
yep.
Trying to make Starlight Square happen.
I went by there the other day. I figured you would take really good photos because mine.
I've definitely been around there, yes. So I hope everybody's seeing this.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Okay, so this was last time we had a show we just started showing the sketches of the right. You know, the idea, and apparently it's Mark Boyce Watson is one who's doing a lot of the design work.
Yeah,
and his son helping out as well and others, and yeah, well, we took some pictures back
that's
then.
That's what we showed a couple weeks.
Yeah,
ago.
And it was just basically a parking lot, right?
And slowly getting
happening here. Right. Okay, but now, you know, as of about a week ago, and I'll show you some more of these pictures here.
Yes.
They had put up all of the structure. There was this huge amount of jersey barriers and this steelwork that's and this scrim with interesting design sort of laid on here. And, and some of these platforms will actually be very soon sporting tables and chairs for people with a railing. So everything should be good and safe here.
Oh, I thought that was a stage.
No, this is the stage.
Oh, that's the
right.
stage. Okay.
And I think some of the primary performers will be from Central Square Theater, but also people from the dance complex. But my understanding.
Improv.
Improv Boston.
Boston is going to be there too. Yeah.
And there have been a lot of requests coming in, people wanting to actually use the space and do some performances.
Now, I think, aren't they going to try to have an admission price on this stuff?
I think for some of the performances, this will be actually a revenue generator. So
they can control the entrances and exits.
That's right. In fact, this is entirely enclosed.
Right.
So
I went by yesterday because the farmer's market, I was wondering how they were going to configure that, but it's in back of what you're seeing.
That's
now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Okay.
This is facing the stage. This is opposite the stage, facing the stage.
So again, that's Bishop Allen Drive you're looking, right?
Or no? This is front. Mm-hmm. It's from the stage looking toward Central Square. So what you're seeing
that's what I'm saying. So it's
right. So this will actually have, this will be for spectators and whatever looking toward the stage, right? Mm-hmm. Again, this is on the other side, you know, so basically we've seen four sides here now.
Okay.
And you know, and actually a lot has happened actually since I took these photos last week.
Yeah, I was there yesterday. It was all closed.
But this is sort of looking from one of the platforms toward the stage. So you can see it's fully enclosed.
So are they going to have more than one performance going on?
Within this, I believe it'll be a single performance within this arena, as it were. And then in addition, there will be some other things. It'll be like restaurant space and stuff on the outside.
Restaurant space.
Yeah. And then, you know, various other kind of events and functions will be able to happen outside of this.
Will there be a tented area so you can do it whether the weather is?
I think there might be, but I don't know for sure. Right.
Okay.
Again, everything's meeting the handicap accessibilities, meeting all necessary fire codes.
Right.
You know, and I've talked to some of the people who are actually in charge of putting this together.
Yeah.
And you know, and there, you know, one of the thoughts that we talked about was that, you know, if this is successful, and by successful I don't mean makes a lot of money, I just mean it actually they were able to pull it off.
And people want to go.
Right. And people want to go, and it met the need. Then there'll be people around the city will say, well, can we do something else, you know, in Harvard Square? Can we do something up at Danahy Park, you know, and do something like this to create kind of a venue? So they're basically going to know how to break this down, reassemble things like that.
Right. But the weather, I mean, if everything cooperative, that's
right. Weird. But they do want to know how to sort of do this more than once if necessary. But again, just a few more shots from the stage looking out there. So it's a pretty decent
space. So I'm just trying to figure out if the stage, that's the stage in the back and the part here is for people?
In the foreground is the stage looking out at where the people will be scattered about.
Well, how many people are we talking about assembling in this area?
You know, I don't know because you also have to meet the social distancing.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I would love to go to this, but I have not been sitting in any big crowds at all.
Right. And
just don't know.
Yeah, there may be some reason for caution in that regard.
Yeah.
But I believe they're going to have a soft opening this Friday.
Really?
So that's August 7th, and then the more real opening the following, I believe on Saturday, but it's coming up pretty soon. For the most part, they put it together. They're pretty much just covering up some of the structural elements now.
Okay.
That, from the outside.
Oh, I love the outside,
So there's Bob and Janet Moses are featured on this is the side on the Norfolk Street side.
Beautiful? And those will stay because those are beautiful scrims. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they'll stay as long as Starlight Square stays.
Well, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Right, which hopefully will be well into the fall. We're crossing our fingers and being hopeful for
Very
that.
Nice.
The other side facing Bishop Allen has a lot of sort of more topical scenes as well.
Yeah.
And here's a couple pictures of a couple of masked marauders.
Yeah.
Michael Monasteem on the left and Patrick Barrett, who really are kind of the movers and shakers within the Central Square Business Improvement District apparatus to make some of these things happen. This picture was actually taken before any really anything other than the basic steel.
Oh, right. You can see that.
You can see that in the background. So I go by there pretty much every day and run into Michael. I saw Michael today, talked to Patrick for a while today. Nina Berg, who we both know, is also doing a lot of the community
works. Hey, Nina.
Yeah, so so the thing is there are a lot of hands on deck here trying to make a great thing happen, and it's really kind of impressive seeing this happen in the midst of a pandemic to try and do creativity in this particular way here. I went by there today. You know, they had more coverings covering more of the space, like the square in the square.
I have not seen that. The square in the square. Welcome to once a parking lot for cars. This is now a place for people. That's true. There's no parking there.
The terminology, the square in the square, I believe is not only listed in the Red Ribbon Commission report from some time ago, so I think that's where they're borrowing it. But there was a time when Morris Nagar, who owns some of the adjacent properties, had kind of an idea of actually doing some redevelopment at Norfolk and Mass Ave, which would include a space, something, not exactly like this for sure, but some real draw that would be back there that was even then, back in before 2010, it was being called the Square in the Square. So in a kind of a temporary way, it's the realization of something, of an idea that people, and not just Peter Valentine, have talked about for some time.
Right.
Again, just some more of the design work that I saw when I was by there.
I did not see that. That wasn't there the other day.
And this is sort of facing to the outside here. This actually looks a little bit like the conceptual drawing that was put in the original advertising. You know, again, another shot of the square within the square. But one of the things I particularly like was this. Is this I saw today for the first time.
That just was put up, huh?
They just I just saw it today for the first time.
Oh, what street is that on? Is that Bishop?
This is basically facing toward Mass Ave.
Yeah.
Toward where, you know, where normally cars would be able to pass through back there. Basically facing somewhat toward Graffiti Alley. Not quite exactly toward Graffiti Alley. It's staggered a little bit, but there. And it's a basically a reproduction of the old Central Square.
Oh my God.
The theater that used to enter at Libby, where it was, where now Libby's Liquor is.
I think I remember that.
No, I don't know. Maybe it might predate you, but it was.
Wasn't there a theater? Oh, I'm thinking of where the Bio Lab is. There was a theater.
There was a Central Square Cinema, which was down at the bend by Lafayette Square. There was the Olympia Theater, which was which later became a gas station site, which is now a little park across from where the old police station is.
Yeah.
But I just think this is sort of nice. This was just particularly great. Yeah. Yeah. Now just for some random talk around town.
I haven't seen those. Where did you see those?
This was sort of interesting. You know, the Central Square Business Improvement District does a great job, I think, of putting up really great murals that really emphasize beauty. But I think it's, anyways, another entity that actually likes to put designs on some of the utility boxes that are a little more message oriented. Yeah. But on the right here, this was actually a little bit of guerrilla work where somebody illegally.
Very official. I was going to say that's got to be illegal, right?
Yeah, it was illegal. And it, basically somebody opened this up and put in kind of a political message right in the bus shelter in front of City Hall. So it has since been removed,
I
but I wanted
say.
To.
Oh, that's the huge one right in the bus.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, how did they get that in there? It must have been at night.
Right, exactly. Wow. So so I thought maybe we'll take a break from that, but we can come back to some other photos around town.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some interesting, you know, one of the sort of the unintended side effects of the pandemic for some of us, certainly me, is that, you know, I like to go walking anyway, but because you just need to get out of the house. So I'll go out on these walks and I'll start noticing things that maybe I haven't thought about in years.
Me too. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I think everybody should really do that. You know, go out and get your exercise, but also just
There's a lot of things that are engraved in the ground, like University Park. There's all kinds of things there.
Yes.
That I didn't know about.
Yeah.
So the simplex thing. And yeah.
It's
your eyes. You see so much.
And it's not just public art. I mean, honestly, I've been to so many planning board meetings or whatever where somebody's going to build up a building and then they say, oh, you have to put in a particular element here, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And the cumulative effect over 20, 30 years of projects where, you know, there's been some sort of influence to actually make interesting things happen. It's actually visible. If you actually walk the streets of Cambridge in either the developed districts or not, you notice things that are really kind of incredible. And actually people's private homes, you notice things that are actually pretty incredible.
I know.
You know? It's so, and sometimes just pretty darn funny too. You know, it's like people really will do that. You know, so
there's so a lot to see, and you don't have to walk on a shared street. That's for
sure. By the way, an interesting thing about the shared streets. You know, we have the three shared streets. There'll probably be more before all is said and done. But in a curious way, the city put an announcement out, I think yesterday, that said that because of the storm that was expected today, which apparently, thankfully, is less severe than worried about. Because of the high winds, they actually suspended all of the shared streets for today. So if you wanted to go cruising down Magazine Street or Harvard Street, you could have done it, no problem. And I think it was really because they have those little A-frame signs that probably would have just been flying all over the place in the winds.
Too many.
Yeah. But anyway, and I think you pointed out before we got on the air that there is a shared street webinar
meeting right now as we speak.
Right now, you know, so
it's a Zoom webinar. You probably are on a list, so I'm going to tune in after we.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't really consider the shared streets to be particularly controversial, but I know that some people are bothered by them and some people love them to death. I actually have a photo in amongst our photos
that
kind of will show you, I think, a really good outcome of a shared street on Harvard Street.
You know who I think they're good for, and I'm not complaining about it, but they're good for the cyclists. To me, that's who really benefit the most.
I think
as
probably
a pedestrian, I'm not going to walk in there. And as a pedestrian, I have to then now dodge cars and bikes. So I'm not doing that.
But,
and the sidewalk's fine for me. So I do think it's a boon for cyclists, which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is.
I know, I'm completely in agreement. I mean, honestly, those are the beneficiaries, right?
Yes.
So I was going to show you just a few more of these pics here. All right. So so this one, I would call this sort of like, message oriented stuff. But, this is sort of part of the funny stuff of Cambridge. Okay. So here, if you go down, I think is that Great Eastern it's called? It's over
that
at the
That is
corner.
Great Eastern. Yeah. That's been there forever.
I know, but I love that they've got the mannequin out there with the
without any clothes on,
right? But also with the the COVID-19 mask on it, they're up close. You know, I mean, this is if that's not just like Central Square having a little fun.
Oh yeah.
You know? But meanwhile, if you wander down by Magazine Beach, which there some of the spaces have been sort of fenced off while they were getting.
Okay.
Grass were growing and plantings were going in place. And some of it is still closed off. But it's interesting when you walk down there, some parts of Cambridge where you might actually not appreciate the fact that you're in the city, the way the trees are
beautiful down
up.
I love what's happened down there.
Charles River is like 12 feet away at this time here, but it really feels very much
really nice.
Yeah, no, I think it's really shaping up magnificently. Mm-hmm. And there are little elements that were put in, I guess in conjunction with the DCR and the Friends of Magazine Beach, these benches that
Beach Partners, it's called.
Yeah.
But
they had to certainly take some of the shrubbery out there so you could actually get river views. Right. It's sort of like select windows on the river.
Right.
And
right.
I'm looking at it when I was walking through there saying like, this is just great. I mean, this is just great. And there's actually a couple of these ones around in there.
Is that wood?
I believe so. Yeah.
Last year they tried those Adirondack chairs and
them
were taken.
Just walk away. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So
now,
I think it's
now if you're going to be wandering around Magazine Beach area, there are some other things that are a little fun to see. Now, this next picture here, Okay, if I just showed you that picture, what comes to mind?
Kill a rabbit among, oh my God, the rabbit killed all the birds. The geese.
The geese, right?
The geese feathers.
You know, it sort of reminded me of an old Monty Python episode, you know, of some vicious rabbit or something. Yeah. But in fact, what it is sort of down where the white geese are close to the BU Bridge. Almost and the like rabbit just sort of hangs out there, but he's scattered amongst, you know, the...
Well, there's bunnies everywhere around and Cambridgeport.
Absolutely. It's really true. Yeah. So what I did is I took a little walk down there through an area I actually hadn't walked through for a good long while, but because I believe they're having meetings of the Grand Junction
Thursday at 6 o'clock, right? Grand Junction Railroad Working Group that invited so 5:30.
So there's some places where there's some non-functioning railroad tracks, but this is also an active Grand
down
Junction
by the Ford Building down there. Is that where
this? Pretty close, This is actually walking down toward the BU Bridge along the railroad tracks.
You were on the tracks. Wow.
Yeah. Now, and a train came through shortly afterwards, I might add.
Oh, my
but,
God.
But look, you know, you're aware of them. But right here is the under, this is where Memorial Drive actually comes through there. So walk through there, and it's a pigsty.
Yeah.
There are people who are living in and around there. I heard there were reports of a 40 stolen bike or picked up bicycles that in various states of disassembly that were down in there. There were a few characters sort of, I didn't want to disturb them, who were, you know, pretty much camped out in there.
Yeah.
But this is part of the path that the Grand Junction, the community path, would follow if and when that actually comes into being.
But it's still a working railroad, isn't it?
It very much is. And in fact, if you actually, most people will, especially if you're at the head of the Charles, everybody knows the view of the railroad bridge, looking at the bridge, but not too many people will walk down there. And this is actually looking across here.
So what would happen, Robert, if the plan went through? What happens to the trains that use that? It'd be next to it?
To the best of my knowledge, what's happening here is on the left, you see here the active rail line, and then there's one piece which, to my knowledge, has never actually sported a rail. It's basically, it was a double bridge for double track, but I don't know that it ever had the other track on this other side. But the Grand Junction, the pedestrian path and the community path would actually, I believe, use the other side. Yes.
Really? Right now, next to a railroad? Ooh.
Well, there's rail on one side and there are people on the other side.
Okay.
Now there is another alternative that people have discussed, which would actually have this be double track rail. So you'd have rail here, rail on the other side, and then they would probably have to cantilever something off the side of the bridge.
That's not going to happen. That sounds too.
No, I think honestly it's going to be single track in my view. But you know, there are advocates who, in the long view, would love to have a home of the commuter line coming through here. But I really can't see it happening. It's with all the grade crossings in Cambridge.
Well, don't they want it to connect to what they hope is a West Station out by the
So this is Cambridge looking toward Boston and Alston. Right. So if you go here, by the way, I have walked over this, and it's not something I think people should do.
No, you should not encourage.
Right. And when we did that 40 years ago, because we were young and stupid, right as soon as we got to the other side, a train came. So.
Oh, my gosh.
But there's room. You could jump off to the side. It's not a real concern.
But what would happen if they did do that? Would those be commuter trains, or would that be a single line? Or what,
you know, I think it would be more like light rail, you know, like a trolley line or something like that.
That would be nice, actually.
I think that could be really great, you know. But it's a resource, it's available, you know, the structure exists, and there are some, and just having it be kind of a dump is really not the best use.
No, it isn't.
So this is just looking straight over the rail.
Look at you, my goodness.
Right?
You really were taking chances.
And then this is on the other side, which has no rail at all and no bed and nothing. So, but you could put a platform on that, and then that could become the Grand Junction community path.
That would be a community path.
I mean, I haven't really seen anybody take pictures down here in a long time, so I kind of thought
you're probably
it would be
the first. You're an original.
Well, I'm sure some have, but I just thought it would be kind of worth doing.
Thank
here.
You. Yeah.
And then
I would not want to venture there. Yeah.
And then this is sort of looking from below, up in and around there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, in the spirit of sort of walking around town. I have to say, I've encountered a mama turkey with six little pulls. This is right on Green Street.
Holy
Close to, it's actually Green and Putnam Ave. This is right on Putnam Ave.
Yeah.
You know, very well-behaved birds. It was kind of cool. And I was since I was mentioning earlier about the shared streets, this here is at the corner of Bigelow and Harvard Street, where on one, I guess, Saturday or Sunday, a musician simply set up right here at the corner. Yeah. And then there was a crowd of people just using the shared street as a musical venue.
I see there's some chairs there over in that section there.
Yeah.
So people were using the street. Okay.
Yeah. So if things like that can happen in some of these shared streets, I think that's a great outcome.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't just have to be a thoroughfare for the people on the bikes, you know.
Right.
I thought this was kind of a nice thing to see, you know. Meanwhile, just taking a few pictures, back on Mass Ave, they're actually buttoning up some of the project around the old Mass and Main building, including, this is actually going to be a cycle track, a separated bicycle facility on the curb, which is really ultimately what the city would prefer rather than these things with the plastic posts and whatever. Yeah. And as part of the understanding for building the Mass and Main project, which is now called Market Central, I might add, this was one of the amenities that was going to be built in, and it's happening now. So so it's starting to take shape, and things, hopefully the whole width of Mass Ave will be restored to active use pretty soon.
But how long will the actual cycle path be?
That's permanent. That'll be permanent.
Right, but from where to where?
It's already paved now, by the way. It'll go up to about Douglas Street. Yeah, yeah. So I think as other major projects happen over time, I believe the expectation is that there may be some continuation of that. I mean, there's some places where you can't do it. Some places you can.
They've already taken away parking spaces, I assume.
Doing the cycle track here, you could actually have parking all along here outside the curb. So I don't know what their intention is, but that's sort of happening. This is one of your photos,
night.
Judy.
Yeah, I think I was out that Friday night. That was their first, it was a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, opening night at Fenway, so you can actually look and see the lights of Fenway in the distance. And to me, it was something kind of nostalgic and hopeful about seeing that.
It was,
But again, in the same spirit of when you walk the town because of the pandemic, these things that have actually come into fruition, this is one of the ones. This is
I love this. I just love walking around there.
When I was coming home from work for a few years, I would walk through much every day. Yeah. But one of the things that I like about it, this is actually a real photo, but I was looking at it today. I said, doesn't it look like one of those conceptual drawings?
Yeah.
Is expected, but that's real.
I know, because of that background, that building in the back almost looks like it
looks like it was done within a CAD cam or something like that, right?
And that's the wind is MIT, kicking up, right? Yeah. It's like Lab Central, it says.
MIT may own the land and have like a long-term.
There's all these open
They are is the some of these places have the option of closing them down. You can understand why, if there was an organized protest or whatever.
Yeah.
So on the other side of this little tunnel over here is where you go by where the next facility, just call it the next facility, is.
Right.
It's Novartis, but that's actually, they have a gate that can open and close for that one. It's beautiful area, actually.
But you still can, most of them have been open, I've noticed.
Most of the time it's open, And this is actually Osborne Street.
Yeah, that's actually looking the other way. And then there's places to sit to the left, and you walk all the way through to, I mean, there's just so many places to walk.
This is actually technically a public street. This is Osborne Street, you know.
Right.
I think it's called Osborne Street, or may be the next one. But it really just serves the pharmaceutical companies that are actually within here.
Pfizer. This is funny. Oh, my God.
Now, this let me ask you, this photo here was taken where? This is
right
in that
near
same
where
vicinity?
I was, yeah.
Right there, there's okay.
A parking garage right over there. Somewhere.
Yeah, so 593 available spaces, right?
Amazing.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, that's some measure of how many people are working from home, right? They're not coming into work so much, you know, and
just the fact that it can hold that many.
But that's definitely a piece of the reality. And I love this picture. This is a space I haven't even seen yet. It's where Little Donkey is operating.
I assume that's the Little Donkey.
It is.
Yeah.
So it's basically
sort of came upon it as I was walking. I said, "Oh, look at this."
Yeah. So it's in this little parking area that's sort of tucked behind like a prop
approximately where the Santander Bank is. And the other
You know, it's interesting. By the way, there was once a very, very great, before my time, by the way, but it was a blues club. It was located here. I don't know whether it disappeared by fire or other reason, but it became a parking lot. So in a kind of an interesting way, it's a revival of the spaces.
Oh, there was a building on this block.
There was a building back here. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's one of those ones I want to find out a little bit more about because it was some really interesting performers who came through here. It was apparently a particularly great
Cambridge
space.
Well, Cambridge Historical Commission, right?
Yeah. No, and it's actually, they actually have a website for it. I just at the top of my head, I'm not remembering the name of the club, but it was kind of an amazing place.
Okay.
Now, the city council actually did meet.
A week ago Monday.
Well, they actually met yesterday, but it was for the simple task of approving changes of polling locations.
Right.
But the midsummer meeting is often sort of a big deal, because there's a lot of stuff that just sort of gets in the queue and collects.
There were like 30 city manager agenda items.
That's pretty typical that you have a lot of communications, a lot of orders and whatever. Actually, I thought there would be even more policy orders, quite honestly, but they weren't. But they seem to be focusing more on there's a lot of kind of potentially controversial ones, police related ones, to be sure. So some of them in particular that I don't know whether we'd call them controversial, but interesting, curious, maybe ridiculous too. Mm-hmm. It was one, I think it was order number 14, was the one where I think it was from Zondervan and Sabrina Wheeler was actually suggesting that traffic stops, if somebody runs a red light or whatever.
Done by civilians.
By other city personnel with
like healthcare workers or something.
Either public works, human services, or traffic department.
No thanks.
Now, I think one of the councilors, I forget whom, pointed out that actually under state law, that can't happen. It has to be uniformed police officers.
I didn't know that.
But other people pointed immediately to some relatively routine traffic stops
somebody had a gun.
There was something pretty serious happening. And I think if they were to actually ask the city, other city workers, would you like to be doing traffic stops here? They would all pretty uniformly say, don't you dare make us do that. Right. But, city councilors sometimes get these bright ideas.
I mean, there is Okay.
I think this one was made subject to the charter, right? Because I think it was, there was no it way was, to really move on that. And I think maybe a little more sense will prevail by the time things get fully processed. Yeah. Another police-related one, which was actually a communication from the city manager, really it was from the police department. Remember, there had been this request for this whole inventory of
military grade.
Well, actually, it was supposed to be everything, right? I mean, I did notice they didn't include stationery supplies or toilet paper or anything like that, but they did have weapons.
Yes.
And there were some reports.
I'd like to know how many weapons there are.
I have a general curiosity about, how they do their business, but the mere fact that they had, there's this vehicle, they call it the Bearcat, that's armored, somebody's saying, it's military. And they say, it's not military, it's armored, but it's not military. Yeah. And I'm kind of in agreement with that. But they do have things like assault rifles.
Yeah.
But, I've talked to some of the police officers. I talked to one of them today. And they said, do people actually think we carry those things around and we're actually, jostling somebody in Central Square going, hey, buddy, and you give them a little poke with your machine gun. Yeah. They exist pretty much on reserve just in case there's some hellacious event.
Yeah, I get that.
Dispense with them, get rid of them.
For a minute there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was something of some consequence. Yeah. I think there was a late communication from the police commissioner giving a little clarification about when he said we don't get military equipment, which is true, but they do get equipment that a military person could use as well as a police department could use.
As well as all those civilians that kill Americans with them.
Exactly.
I mean, we have to ban assault weapons, to the people that, it's crazy.
I mean, we're perfectly happy banning nuclear weapons, so why not other things that can do mass killings? I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it. But personally, I'm perfectly comfortable having the police department have them just in case, but you know, but then nobody's using these things in any routine way. So I don't really understand.
But the bottom line for some people and is that police do carry guns.
Yeah, right.
And you see that. You can't help but not see that on the person. And that is just an issue, I think.
I think it's an issue, but the thing is there are certain types of events where you could have not
I'd like to see that.
Without weapons.
You're right.
I think there's a little room for some discussion there.
Yeah, good.
But you know, but this also sort of, it's like movement politics now where, you know, it's like the notion defunding and abolishing police is sort of sweeping the nation.
I know, even if it's
a little on the silly side.
Well, right? I wouldn't use the word silly. You're going to get some feedback.
Well, I mean, sometimes I think it is.
But I just think any extreme can be, but it defines what needs to get done, I think, in some way.
I think that that re-envisioning what either police authority or how any city does its business, let alone their police department.
And they shouldn't be doing a lot of things that they're tasked
to do. And actually some of the most reasonable things that have been suggested are now being implemented. Even the Congress is passing some provisions to do that. And so I think that's a good thing. But
can I just say something?
Go right ahead.
All right. Well, I think, I don't know if I've brought this up before. Back in the late 80s, I worked, there was a lot of funding for mental health. So I worked at a crisis center in Concord, and I carried a beeper every other weekend. And we went out to police stations to interview people. We went out to houses. And I remember going to a house with a coworker. We went together, and this guy had guns in his closet. Now, I don't remember... I mean, maybe we eventually called the police, but we were dealing with that. So, but it really was effective because the police used us to go out and evaluate situations. These are psychiatric emergencies. And that all that money dried up. This was in the early, mid-80s. So I don't know. We've got to return to some kind of, you know, using mental health people better.
I agree. I just think that, and to some degree, Cambridge is actually already doing some of those things.
Yeah, they have people.
They're
on
partnering
staff,
up with some of these
I just think we blanket, you know, we just throw it and say they're all the same.
Right, I mean, I just think government in general and the arms of government, including law enforcement, should always be in a constant procedure, a constant process of evaluation, reevaluation, and not because there's a crowd of people throwing bottles and yelling at you, but because that's just what you should be doing. You're saying, how can we do our jobs as best as possible?
Right, I agree. You know,
and that ought to be the focus, is how do we do our jobs as best as possible? Now, one other thing that I thought was kind of an interesting twist. So there was in the town of Brookline.
Still talking about the meeting.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's a home rule petition, but where the town of Brookline wanted to ban natural gas hookups in buildings. And then Cambridge wanted to do this as well, or at least some councillors were pushing to do this, right? Yeah. You know, maybe with exceptions, maybe with not so many exceptions. But then, you know, for me at least, it was right out of nowhere. There was an opinion from the state attorney general, Maura Healey's office, that pretty much said, you can't do it. You can't do it without changing the state law and the state constitution. That there's actually, it would be a violation of both state law and the Commonwealth's constitution. So,
but even Brookline allowed for homeowners to have gas ovens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Brookline was being pretty good about trying to have a lot of.
So where does that leave Cambridge?
Well, I mean, I think they were just in limbo. I don't know that they'll ever be able to do this, but predictably, it was referred to the Health and Environment Committee, and Councillor Zondervan will, I'm sure, trying to pursue it whole hog, and then whether they're going to try and change the state constitution, I somehow doubt that, but they want to keep it alive, certainly, but that's also definitely a setback.
Speaking of home rule petitions, the real estate transfer tax, from what I followed on the state level, they did not pass that.
And well, the thing is, so this is
Boston. Boston submitted it.
Right. So there was a call for a home rule petition. There have been others who want to have real estate transfer tax.
But they did generally, not on it, right?
Actually, the state legislature vote on it, and they voted on it. It was like a 3-1 vote against it. It was like 130 to 120 to 20.
So where
something.
Does that leave our?
It basically means that even I think personally, this is just my own opinion, that if this were to be refiled as a home rule petition, the state legislature would view it in pretty much the same way that they viewed the general legislation to create a vehicle for doing this. So to me, I don't think this is a battle that is worth fighting. You know, and, you know, I mean,
you have to make the change.
I mean, or maybe it's something worth pursuing over the long haul, but not sort of in the midst of other emergencies right now.
Exactly.
At least that's at least my sense about it.
Okay, we have about a minute and a half left.
Yeah, I'll just say that there were, you know, after everything was sort of in limbo, there were a variety of zoning petitions that actually were forwarded to the city council.
A new one.
One fundamentally new one. There's one, I think, a very interesting one had to do with a canal district, which is basically a kind of coming due of the, you know, there was this big Constellation Center proposal that was down close East to the Broad Canal, East Cambridge. So now there's a zoning petition that would permit much more building density, but also the hope, perhaps, I hope, the fulfillment of this Millennial Center dream. There was that. There was one out in LRF Quadrangle, but maybe the one it will definitely also have some other conversations called the Donovan petition, which was something related to
housing. Yeah,
it was related to different ways of creative ways of producing
housing.
It was housing
to counter
allowing
what they don't like, you don't like. I know.
Right, in some respects, yes. But the thing is, it was also a separate conversation, even with the Envision Cambridge group, about making better use of larger houses that are underpeopled. Right, and allowing them to be sort of split up into multi-units. So anyway, on that note, I think we should probably be winding down.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so we'll see you all soon on Cambridge Inside Out.
All right, good night.